We have the flare, we have the barrel, we have the skinny coming in for like Gen Z, Gen Alpha. But then we also have millennial mums who are like, I'm never stopping wearing my skinny, you know?
I'm Michael Gloster, and this is Fashion Cast. We're talking to fashion leaders and disruptors as we seek inspirational stories and expert insight into the world's most dynamic industry. Heard in over 70 countries, we're building an international fashion community based on fashion topics that matter. Please visit our website, fashioncast.co, to join our email list and learn more. Now, enjoy the show.
On this episode of Fashion Cast, you will meet Amy Leverton, founder of Denim Dudes, co-founder of Hereafter, and author of Denim Dudes, Street Style, Vintage, Workwear, Obsession. Leverton is a native of England, is a denim trend forecaster, and has traveled the world researching everything denim. In the multi-billion dollar global apparel denim market, Leverton's denim trend and style forecasts are coveted and routinely incorporated into the business plans of denim giants such as Levi, Lee, Gap, and Tommy Hilfiger, among others. Amy Leverton is joining Fashion Cast from Los Angeles, California. Welcome to Fashion Cast, Amy. We're so excited to have you on our show.
I'm excited to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So can you please explain to our audience how you initially entered the world of fashion?
Yes, absolutely. I am from the UK. I grew up in the middle of the countryside, very far away from any fashion centers or any fashion of any kind. And I was a tomboy and wore a lot of bib and brace overalls and jeans. And honestly, mostly my brothers, you know, cast-offs and hand-me-downs. But I was always very creative and always sort of, you know, the classic making, you know, clothes for my dolls, etc. And then I think, you know, in my teen years, I discovered Vogue and got it on a subscription at the local village shop and just, you know, lost my mind, loved it. I always thought I would be more of a traditional kind of fashion designer, like Oscar de la Renta or Max Mara, like a dress designer. I knew right away, it was like, this is what I want to do. I specialized, I went to London College of Fashion for my foundation course, which is, you know, in the UK, it's like the 1 year course before you do a degree. I did my BA honors at Kingston University, which is a really reputable fashion university, or it was at the time. I think it still is. And that was a 3 year degree course. And, you know, just excuse my language, pig and shit, definitely was in the right career, loved it. And it's funny because I think when you're young, you don't really necessarily know yourself. You don't know yourself well, you're learning. And like I said, I really thought dresses, I thought, you know, I would be like, I think it is that, and a lot of people's perception of working in fashion is high fashion and runway. And at uni, there are a couple of courses, a couple of semesters, say, that were like denim centric or casual centric, and I aced at them, but still I didn't know it within myself, you know. I was just like, that's just chance. And then looking back, you know, I look at my portfolio and everything that I did in denim was just, there was an affinity there, but I had no idea. And I think it probably, you know, it is to do with my upbringing. Probably I was a tomboy, and you know, I think a lot of people, it's like, it's that whole classic thing of people don't realize that people design pens. You know, everything that in our world is designed. And so I think with workwear, with denim, it's one of those things that you don't think there's a whole team of people designing Dickies, but of course there is, you know? So yes, that's how I got into fashion. I graduated, and my first full-time job, because I interned a little bit, but my first full-time job out of uni was with a very unusual company. They're called Okini. I don't know if they still exist. And they were predominantly casual wear, but they were very unusual insofar as this is early sort of 2002, 2003. Limited edition runs, 100, 200 pieces. They collaborated with people like Adidas on sneakers, Levi's on jeans, Lee, Eversue. Eversue was really big at the time. And so very casual wear. And so I, yeah, that again, that was another defining like moment that kind of got me into denim and casual wear.
So where did the leap from all of that, the background and those initial jobs within the industry, where was the leap to Denim Dudes, to this, you know, really high powered consultancy for the denim world?
Thank you for that. That's very flattering. High powered. Wow. Yeah.
I think you underestimate yourself, Amy. Mm-hmm.
I think I do. Maybe also my bank balance does. My bank balance certainly does.
You should charge more, right?
Yeah. I should. It's funny. Again, it's the trials of being a small business in a way. It's like, but anyway, I'm not going to go down that road yet. We might do later. But okay, so... Okinyi was interesting. I mean, it was a great experience. We were chucked in the deep end. I was straight out of uni and it was a small company. So it was almost, I feel like if you're a design graduate, if the more disorganized the company is, the better experience you get because you're doing everything. And that was the case at Okinyi. It was a small team and we were going to Hong Kong to factories really early. I cut my teeth in that and I did, I'll skip a couple of jobs, but essentially Okinyi didn't work out. It was a bit ahead of its time. Online only, limited edition, all collaborations, all of these things that we're very familiar with now, people weren't really that familiar with. But it was a great time and wonderful for experience. But it folded. I did a little bit of freelance. I worked for a company called Next, who is a bit like a kind of Target in the UK. So very kind of like mum fleeces for dog walking kind of vibes, which wasn't me. But as a designer, my like affinity, like what I love about fashion is the research, the sketchbooks, the mood boards, the eureka moments that get you inspired. And I didn't, you know, again, you're kind of like learning and feeling your way. But a job came up at an agency called WGSN, who is still, I think, the number one leader in the world as far as these sort of platforms are concerned, the online platforms and consultancy platforms. And it was in denim. And I was like, well, okay, I've had some experience in denim. At the time, I was doing casual wear and jersey, but I knew denim. And I remember doing a project to get that job. And I loved it. I just, you know, when you're like not blowing my own trumpet, but I knew I was doing a good job of it. I knew I was researching it well. I just knew what to do. Like I intrinsically knew what to do. And I got the job. And then, yeah, I was in the job and I was like, yep, this is it. And I have been in this line of work since, and that was 2007. So from sort of 2003, my first job, to 2007, I was designing for various different companies. And then 2007 was when I got into WGSN. And then I haven't really left. I think with trend forecasting, for those who don't really know what it is or what we do, you really do look at everything, and more so today than in 2007, you really looked at pop culture. You looked at, you know, remember that band, The Horrors, that all wore like skinny black jeans and like had big hair and back coat, and like Russell Brand with his skinny jeans. You know, like you look at pop culture and what cool emerging bands are wearing. We went to a huge part of our job was going to festivals. I mean, at 27 years old, like you get paid to go to a festival and attend a festival and take photos of all the cool kids. I mean, amazing, loved it. So we were traveling around, you know, the world, going to festivals, going to Coachella, going to Roskilde in Denmark, going to Glastonbury Festival, wow, going to Japan, going to Tokyo, running after kids on the street, just asking to take their photo. Also looking in stores and, you know, you're just soaking everything up.
So what do you do now to look for denim trends?
I mean, same, but also same. The old
social media,
mobile phone.
Social media.
It's changed so much. But okay, so the difference as well, I think I was nodding to, is I would say it's got a lot deeper. So I think maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago, it was very much like pop culture. Not to say that pop culture isn't hugely important, it still is. But, if we talk about Sydney Sweeney, of course, as soon as Euphoria came out a few years ago, I was obsessed with Euphoria because that is a reflector of culture. It's a reflector of what, you know, kids are watching, what they are wearing, what they are doing, you know. So pop culture is still huge, but it's got deeper. You know, I think in 2007, I wasn't really thinking about politics. I wasn't thinking about the degrowth economy or like anti-capitalist movements, but that is a huge part of what we do now, mm-hmm. and what we have to kind of learn and read about. But I think in general, I think, you know, with forecasting, it's just, you're good at it if you have an inquisitive mind. If you're interested in people, you're interested in human behavior and what makes people tick and what makes people respond to clothing or like want to buy certain things. And we do that. We're like birds. We're just, you know, we're showing off to each other. Like human nature is that we're trying to show off to each other, or we're trying to find our people through our dress or express ourselves through our dress. And so if you're interested in that, it kind of, all of these things come together and it the dots just connect. If you're doing it full time, the dots just connect and you just know, if that makes sense.
But why do I, on the one hand, see you in terms of predicting and forecasting future trends 2-3 years out. But on the other hand, I see like a lot of different trends being worn today, whether it's bell bottoms, or different colored jeans, or the laser jeans, the skinny. There, it seems like everything
is still in style.
Is everything in style, or is it not in style? And are you forecasting something that does it really matter to Levi or to Wrangler or to whomever what's going to happen in 3 years? Is everything that's already happening and is still happening?
Michael, do you want a job? Because yes.
What a job.
Yes, it is wild. So a lot has changed. You're right. Like one, yes, I look at more deeper culture than pop culture than I used to. But two, the diversification of fashion trends is actually, it's probably one of the number one problems that we talk about with brands, because it is hard. If you're a denim designer, so we did an event in May, and it was so inspiring. It was with this woman, Alyssa Goodchild, who, if you're familiar with the YouTube channel, she does it with her daughter. It's called Style Like You. And it's incredible. She used to be a stylist, and she does these deep dives where a person will come in who has a really cool style, and they've done people like Janelle and trying to think, like really, they've done some famous people, but also like really cool New Yorker stylish people. They sit on a stall, it's just them and a wall, and they sit on a stall fully clothed in like a really cool outfit because they're all cool people. And they ask them questions about like what it means to, like, you know, to be them and what clothes mean to them, etc. And as they're doing that, they take items of clothing off. And the idea, it's not pervy. The idea is kind of like, it's a unpeeling of the like armor that we wear every day that to express ourselves. And as she's asking these questions, it's getting more and more personal and deeper. And honestly, these videos, they're about 10 minutes long, each one. They are so incredible. They're so emotional as well. Like by the end of it, you're crying. They're crying. Everyone's crying. And, you know, because clothes can mean so much to a person.
Wait a minute. That sounds like a future podcast for us, doesn't it?
It's so cool. Funny enough, they've gone into doing podcasts as well. So yeah, you should check her out. She's amazing. She's about 68, 70 years old. Incredible, like really cool style. But okay, the point I was going to make is we interviewed her. So the event was intended, it was in LA, and it was intended to inspire, you know, like our clients or potential clients, you know, like the local design teams in LA. And I interviewed her about that, and we talked about individualism and I think it's a wonderful thing that people are more and more so like expressing their true selves, and they are kind of moving away from the sort of like micro trend cycle of everything and kind of like delving into what they want to wear or what they feel like wearing. And then what we did is we followed that with a panel discussion with Paige Adams-Geller from Paige Jeans, an amazing guy called Benjamin Talley Smith, who designs for a bunch of different brands and has like, he's one of those guys that you don't know him, but he has designed a lot of jeans that you would know about. A guy from the fabric perspective, from a mill. It was moderated by a dude from GQ, a guy called Gerald. And the panel was, when everything is trending at once, how the hell do you design next season's jeans? It was really interesting. We didn't solve the problem, unfortunately, but but it, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, like the barrel jean, and then, you know, there's talk about the skinny coming back in for like Gen Z and Gen Alpha, but in an ironic way.
Yeah, I noticed skinny wasn't really trendy anymore, skinny jeans.
Yeah, and it's now, it's happening again, but it's
oh,
very
really?
Fringe.
Okay.
Yes.
Good thing Gen I Alpha good thing fringe. I didn't get rid of mine.
Yes, you'll need them. Although yeah. I don't know whether I'm going to get back on it, because it's a bit like low rise. I'm just like, nah. Mm. I did it. I'm 45 now. You guys go.
Me,
but
yeah,
I'm
me too.
Not gonna, you know what I mean? It's
me
like
too.
That.
The only thing probably I wouldn't go back to is bell bottoms.
Oh, interesting. And yet Kendrick Lamar. And
I
like
noticed that. Yeah. Yeah.
I love the discourse around that. It was such a fun 24, 48 hours because I watched at my friend's house and I thought we were just, I mean, I'm a fan of Kendrick Lamar and I'm not a massive American football fan and, you know, but it's just halftime. We have a halftime household kind of thing. I was round at a friend's house and it's for the halftime show, right?
Uh-huh.
And then suddenly I'm like, okay, I guess I'm working now then because I
have to. Wow. Like, yeah, it's funny how everybody noticed his jeans.
Yes. And I was like, okay, I guess I'm sitting here in the kitchen now at work and like working out where are the jeans from and like just searching around, like who's the stylist and what, you know, it was wild. It was really fun. Mm-hmm. But I loved how there were a lot of women kind of my age, like, you know, elder millennials and Gen X
yeah.
were like, all of the discourse around, oh my God, going to the back of their wardrobe to get their like 2000s like boots and flares out. But yeah, I mean, it is. It's like we have the flare, we have the barrel, we have the skinny coming in for like Gen Z, Gen Alpha. But then we also have millennial mums who are like, I'm never stopping wearing my skinny, you know? Then of course the baggy is the thing. The baggy is the reigning supreme at the moment.
Yeah, we have it all now.
It is, and yeah, and it's hard. And
well,
it is.
You just made my point.
Yeah, exactly, Michael. You really can't pinpoint what the trend is. Yeah, there's no trend. But yeah. So you live in LA. What makes LA the key global denim manufacturing hub?
Well, I mean, I saw the, you know, you sent me the questions before and I saw it and I just have this pang of sadness at the moment because of obviously everything that's happening with ICE, and we're actually putting something together, just a passion project, a little video interviewing a few people who are kind of pivotal in the manufacturing scene here, because it's tough times, one, for Made in America, and two, for Made in LA, for various different reasons, obviously. LA is an amazing city. And it's great that there's a very thriving, like, vintage scene here. We have the Rose Bowl every month, which is, you know, one of the world's biggest flea markets. You've got people flying over from Japan to buy. It's incredible. Having that on your doorstep is amazing. There's an amazing community. But then it's so unusual, yeah, living in a city where there's a ton of factories here. I can go to manufacturers and pattern cutters and go to wash houses and print houses and, you know, I can make a, like, if you told me to make a jean by noon, I could probably do it, you know? Wow. It's incredible. Well, maybe 2 p.m., okay. but, you know, you can do it. You can do it all here. But it is dwindling, you know, even when I first, you know, I moved here 8-9 years ago. And even then, you know, people talked about the good old days. It used to be huge here. Manufacturing used to be huge.
Are you saying jean manufacturing?
Yeah.
Are you talking about just apparel manufacturing, or are you talking about manufacturing in general?
I would say apparel. I mean, it's such an apparel-centric city, and it's a very denim-centric. I think what LA does the best, two product categories, what Americans call is knits, but I would call jersey, you know, cut and sew jersey knit, and jeans and denim, or let's not just say jeans, denim jackets, just all denim, you know, denim garments, but predominantly jeans. I feel like that's what LA really thrives on and does the best. And the talent pool is that, you know, you go to wash houses and there's these guys who have worked in laundries for 30, 40 years and are incredible at what they do, like true artisans. You got a button guy who will talk to you about buttons for an hour. You know, it's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, we have a denim manufacturer here in Detroit.
Oh.
Detroit Denim. Yeah.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's really nice. We visited once before.
Yeah, they're teeny. Ah. They're teeny, though. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, this is the thing. They're all small, kind of artisanal. There's a couple here that are larger. Cytex actually was the biggest. That's the biggest kind of like apparel kind of news from LA in the last 5 to 10 years. They opened up in year 2000, right in the middle of the pandemic. Poor guy. It's owned by a guy called Sanjeev, and the factory's called Cytex. It's in Vietnam. Wow. When Everlane launched, Everlane was around. I think they started mostly with like tees and hoodies and things. And then they were like, here's our denim. And of course, they had to do it the right way. And it probably taken them years of like research and you know, product development. But they made it out of Cytex. And Sanjeev is a very inspirational dude. It's a big factory. I don't know what their capacity is offhand, but I have visited it. It's big. They do Calvin Klein. They do Everlane. They do G-Star. They do kind of a lot of people. Madewell, you know, a lot of people. And he decided he wanted to make in America. So he still has the factory. It's interesting. He has a mill and a factory in Vietnam still, but he's like, okay, I'm going to try domestic manufacturing. I'm going to try nearshoring. And he has a factory here and it is always at capacity. And again, I'm not quite sure what their capacity is. I'm sorry, but it's pretty big. It's pretty damn big. And they do cut and sew, but they also do wash as well. And he is very steadfast in his sustainable approach. So all of his, you know, technology, like he has laser machines, et cetera, et cetera. So he'll have, you know, he has Tonella, he has Genealogia, like he has all of the like best equipment. But he's struggled. There's an amazing article in the New York Times. They interviewed him a couple of weeks ago, a month ago, about tariffs and about like, hey, I am trying to do the Made in America thing. It is so hard. This is why, you know. And then, of course, he had a whole Vietnam set up and he's being tariffed and his fabric comes from there. You can't, you know, there's barely any mills here now. So even if you're cutting and sewing in the US, you are bringing in fabrics from all over the world. Trims do not get made in America anymore. So buttons, rivets, that is all coming from overseas. You can't build a jean here, not from scratch. And it's sad, mm-hmm, but that's where we're at, mm-hmm, you know?
Okay.
Hopefully that'll change in the near future.
I hope so. Yeah. I do. I mean, there's a lot of people here who are determined. I think the issue is that it's just the cost.
The cost.
It's the cost.
It's always the cost.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
I had a friend the other day and she's about 45, 48. And she has a vintage store and she is a prolific designer, denim designer, worked in denim design for a long time. She now has a store, a vintage store. So she's been out of design for a little while. And she's like, I think I'll make my own product again because she really can. Like if anyone can, she can. It's going to be $400. Wow. Like if you want to make a jean down the road and have some, and you're a small business owner and have some profit built in and not even a crazy amount of profit, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, maybe 300.
So then the designer brand should do it, like Dior or all those big names, don't you think? I mean,
it depends what you sell.
Are they still popular, the designer jeans?
I mean, yes, I think it just depends what you sell. Like, I think, you know, funny enough, you know, Amiri is sort of half in Italy and half in, I think the denim is made in Italy. I don't know offhand. But he is also, you know, his design team are half here as well. I mean, there are, when I go to these factories, you know, you're seeing Rachel Comey, you're seeing some made, like Frame. But they're also making overseas. They kind of like spread it out. No one can really afford to sort of make their whole range here unless they are like, you know, like you say, a kind of designer level. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would say when it comes to a lot of, say, you know, the Italian design houses, they're making in Italy because Italy has actually great denim production. So that's their hub and that's great. And I'm all for that. Like I'm up for these hubs that respond to the places they sell or the where the design team are based, because then you can go visit, you could be hands-on, you know, it's great. But Calvin Klein do not, you know, I don't know if they make any jeans here. I'm trying to think of other American, you know.
Ralph Lauren.
Isn't
he American?
Well, no.
He is indeed. You do see some Ralph in the factories here.
But they would never manufacture here, would they? That's just too costly.
Little bits and pieces, but everyone's overseas. Because even them, it's like, it's still kind of, I mean, it's insane. But like, I guess with a company that big, and I don't pertain to know how all of that stuff works, because I'm not, you know, like a production manager for Ralph Lauren, but I'm sure, you know, they're a big corporation. You know, my friend who wants to make jeans, she's just baking in her overhead of her as a person. And then obviously what it costs to make it, which is all of the people involved. But, you know, Ralph Lauren has to bake in every store in the world and every, you know, yeah. So it's different. It's hard. So I think that's why, you know, like bigger brands just really cannot manage it. Yeah. But also, you know, let's be honest, and I don't want to slam anyone here, not obviously present company, but the industry. We're in a capitalist society, and there's a lot of big profits baked in and a lot of money that is funneled right the way up. And that's why, you know, I think there's a lot of kids these days who are like kind of a bit anti-capitalist, because I'm sure there are some huge profits being made. Shareholders, you know, that kind of BlackRock, you know, even Levi's, I think the Vanguard is an investor in Levi's. It's just become a machine. And when it's a machine, it's out of your hands. It's out of your hands. It becomes something else.
Exactly.
Okay, we will be right back with Amy Leverton, the world's foremost expert on denim, after this commercial from Omeh Organics, omeorganics.com.
Hi, I'm Christine. You may know me as co-host of Fashion Cast, but I'm also the founder and CEO of Omeh Organics. I believe skincare should be simple. Our hyaluronic cream is all you need to nourish your skin morning and night. Sourced from the highest quality organic ingredients from around the world and manufactured in an FDA facility right here in the USA, this incredible cream works to firm, deeply moisturize, and smooth the appearance of your skin. Please visit omeorganics.com and use promo code FASHIONCAST to receive a 15% discount off your first purchase, and you will receive our monthly newsletter free. Now, back to the show.
And we're back with Amy Leverton. She's in LA. We're discussing the world of denim. And Amy, in terms of what Denim Dudes, your company, is doing, on a day-to-day basis, what are you looking for in terms of denim trends, and what is impactful on that search? Is it the designers? Is it, you know, influencers? Is it the culture? Just how are you putting your research together and consolidating all these different avenues?
I mean, great question. I feel like everyone really asks this and is interested in, like, how do you do? Because I think when you hear the word forecast or, you know, trend forecaster, you do think kind of looking into a crystal ball. And I mean, like I said earlier, definitely, you know, pop culture and then deeper culture is a really big one. I do think also people, you know, who are in trend forecasting, you know, I obviously have a lot of colleagues over the years and people I've worked with, there is a kind of inbuilt intrinsic kind of feeling that you get. You know, it's not for everyone. Some people wouldn't pick up on the nuances, but if you're interested in it and you're drawn to it, then you can't help but notice these patterns. But I mean, we are at Denim Dudes, I think we're like conveniently positioned, because denim really, I don't think there's any other item in anyone's wardrobe that reflects culture more. And what I guess I mean by that is, if you think, like, I don't know, the 70s and, you know, flower power and customization and then punk and grunge, it's like denim is, I guess, and jeans by its nature is very customizable and very personal. And it, even if you don't do anything to your pair of jeans, just by wearing it, it's becoming, you know, like you. It will fade and mold to you. So I do think that looking at what's happening in the world it affects jeanswear more than anything, if that makes sense. So we do look at emerging designers, and of course, because, you know, of denim's customizational quality, there's a lot of kids out there doing creative stuff with it. So we do look at kind of like emerging, you know, talent and designers and what they're doing, DIY projects and bedroom makers, as we like to call them, which has exploded after, you know, the pandemic as well. But we also, emerging brands, we talk to the supply chain. We're really well positioned in that way because the denim industry is very tight knit. We go to certain trade shows every season and we are talking to, you know, weavers and farmers and, you know, cotton growers and machinery makers and, you know, the whole supply chain are in one place. And so sometimes it is, you know, tech and innovation that drives jeans. For instance, you know, the skinny jean trend back in the, you know, early to mid 2000s. That was a lot to do with stretch, and it was to do with like a Milk or Candiani who really kind of tapped into the premium market, and they were real stretch gods. They were very good at it. Their technology was great, you know, and designers are looking for something new to design with, and oh, like, you know, let's see what this does. So, and it's never about one thing, but you know, it can, that had a huge effect on the skinny trend kicking off. And also then, yeah, we would read Business of Fashion and Forbes. You know, there's new fashion platforms out there on Instagram. We love Outlander. They're like a new emerging young team of kids in the UK who put Outlander together, and they do a great job. Social media has changed the game, and you're never not looking, unfortunately. I mean, you never switch off from it. And yeah, again, you still look at music and bands and art, and you look at politics. You know, tariffs are relevant. You know, all of these things are going to affect things. And so once you're looking at that and you're doing that every day for your job, you know, because designers have to do, they have to think about all of that, and they also have to work on production and actual physical design and going to factories. We just get to think about this the whole time and collect images and collect images and collect images. And then it just, we always say this, I'm always saying to Shannon, who I work with mostly, she's my like right-hand woman, I'm like, we'll just let the images will tell us. The images will tell us what's happening. You have to see the patterns, but you pull all of the imagery from the runway and there'll be patterns and there will be themes and there will be trends, and it all comes together.
And what have the images of the recent Sydney Sweeney commercials told you?
Oh, yes. Yes, the gossip, the latest denim gossip, I guess. You know what's funny? The images do tell you something, but I get in the comments. I think, sure, we do this for a living and we do this full time and we do notice certain things. But I'm a white woman.
Are you?
I didn't see.
Just kidding.
Look, I watched it and I was like, not great. I just thought it was a bit cheesy and a bit off. But other people taught me why it was a bit off. And also other people responded to it in a much stronger way. And so they should. Like I said, I'm a white woman. Maybe I'm not as sensitive to some of those things. And then I started learning about eugenics and I'm like, whoa, okay, wow. So to answer your question, people tell us, it's TikTok and Instagram has helped so much, because in a way it's like, yesterday we posted about it and we just searched the internet, both TikTok and Instagram. And we just listened to, you know, probably 30 minutes of people's opinions. And then we put up the best or the most compelling. And then we posted it and then everyone started arguing in the comments, and that's us learning, you know, that gives us information and it tells us where we're at. And, you know, a lot of the comments and the issues that people had with it, which, you know, I don't know if you want me to talk about that, but, you know, the fact that she is a blue-eyed, blonde-eyed, and I think it is just like the moment that we're in as well. In America, there's a lot of, what's the word? It's a lot of weight to what you put out as a brand right now. And so it did say something, even if it was unintentional, which a lot of people are like, there's no way it was, but even if it was unintentional, I do think the marketing team and the, you know, C-suite team who, we all know in brands, a lot of people have to sign this stuff off. They did miss a trick. They missed a trick or this was the intention. I don't know.
In a way, it seems quite brilliant from American Eagle, which is essentially a washed up brand in America. And here you have, the jean sales around the world, 4.5 billion. So how do you differentiate yourself?
And they got our attention.
And it continues, you know, here we are a week or something later.
Yes.
People are just constantly talking about it. And, you know, even American Eagle has responded, you know, quite humorously. So it seems like, for what it's worth, it was designed to get attention and to differentiate themselves. And, you know, it's the old saying, you know, all news is good news. You know, even if it's bad news, it's still it's still news. So it seems from that standpoint,
it's viral. It's become a viral sensation.
Right. And the denim market is so huge and so hard. And we're going to talk about this shortly with these startup brands. You know, how do you differentiate yourself? So from that standpoint, you
they
know,
nailed it.
They nailed
it. Yeah, I'm sure. Exactly. I'm sure they're very happy from that standpoint. Yeah.
I know, it's wild. It's wild, and that is testament to like the era that we live in, and it is crazy. You know, it's just like, I guess there's a part of me that feels a bit like, where is this ending? You know, what is success now? You know, because Brooke Shields, you know,
obviously we remember that.
They were nodding to that advert front and center, absolutely, and you know. It's one of those things where, yes, we all talk about that advert, Brooke Shields. I mean, it's an iconic advert, video, imagery. Like, it's legendary, that imagery. And, you know, since, obviously, we've all grown up and gone, well, she was 15. Oh, it was a little, but it's still iconic. So it's to your point, it's really tricky. You're kind of like, you know, has culture really changed? Has advertising really changed? No, it's just this, like, now we just live in this world of attention economy and the stage that these people are playing on is much larger, much broader.
I wonder if it's just our country. Sometimes I think about that. Do you think people in the UK or, you know, in Europe feel the same way about that ad?
No, I mean, like,
is it just here, you know?
I think so. Without getting too, you know, like off the topic of fashion, it is something that I noticed when I first arrived. You know, I moved here in 2016. Trump got in that November. I didn't feel very connected to politics then. I knew, and, you know, I don't know, you obviously will have a diverse listeners. I am not a fan of Trump. I knew it was a bad thing for our country, in my opinion. But I had friends who were like, you know, we were at a bar, they were leaving the bar crying and things. And I just didn't feel that connected because I was just so new. I felt like I was on holiday. I didn't really. But what was my point? I've gone off on a tangent again, so you might have to cut all of this. Then 2020 and, you know, during 2020 and, like, you know, the race discourse that happened, you know, everywhere, all around the country, I learned so much about race relations in America. In England, it's much, racism exists everywhere. It's more covert in England. But here it feels much more visceral. And so I would agree, you know, there is a lot more outrage. And if I look at the commentary on it, it is mostly in America. But then, you know, it's an American brand. She's American. It's fair enough. This is our, you know, this is our discourse to have and our battle to fight, kind of thing. But I do think, from some of the comments I've probably got, I haven't looked at them today. It was going off yesterday. But I think there's a lot of, like, oh, what's the big deal? So what? And I'm sure that's mostly coming from Europe because they're just like, probably, oh, yeah. Come on, guys,
get over it. We have more important. We have more important things to worry about.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. It is interesting. Europeans, we don't. But again, I, you know, it's not for me to say and speak on that. It's not my authority to speak on that. But it is more visceral here. It's more visceral and it's more tangible and it's more tense. Race tensions are tenser here in America than they are in the UK.
Yeah,
In my very small experience as a white woman, you know, I got to be very careful what I say here.
Yeah. So, Amy, are there any startup jean brands that you follow or are interested in?
Yeah, I mean, again, are the things that we look at or the people that we look at are really, I mean, obviously we have to look across the board, but I guess what we hone in on, and especially on our Instagram, is much very small, like kind of one man brand, like makers, and what they're doing. And it is incredible, I think, what social media has done. It's really democratized fashion and leveled the playing field. And a good example of that is there's a brand called Paradox Paris out of Paris. I'm trying to think when they founded, but not that long ago, like let's say 5 years ago. And they are a bunch of, I think there's like maybe two guys who started it, but there's a few of them now. And they make very overworked, beautiful surfaces, like a lot of dark and black, actually. It's quite punk, I guess, references. A lot of overworked and frayed surfaces. And they have exploded. Again, they're not like, you know, they're not American Eagle, of course. It's a very different, it's a different demographic, it's a different buyer, it's a whole different system, I guess, in a way, a different ecosystem. But they have exploded and done really well. And I've seen like their influence and other designers like them really pick up on that as a trend, this sort of overworked surfaces and then jacquard weaves coming in. There's another guy who is called, it's a strange name. He's called Proletta Re-Art and he's based out of Japan. He used to work for big Japanese, used to be niche Japanese brand called Capital with a K. And Capital is now, you know, pretty big. And LVMH just bought it.
Wow.
So that'll be really interesting. Yeah, about a year
Capital
ago.
With a K, okay.
Yeah, and that used to be a very, like, the denim heads, you go over to Japan and you go to all of the stores and you would have to buy there because you couldn't buy it anywhere else. And it's amazing how that has kind of, like, they've come over to the US a little bit more, but they were very protective. I love Japanese brands. And they're like, we could expand, but we also want to stay niche, which is the coolest. But gradually they did come into a few stores here, select stores. And then like, you know, musicians, rappers like ASAP Rocky started wearing them. And now, yeah, now, anyway, I've digressed, but Proletta, this guy, he actually used to work at Capital and do all of this beautiful overwork kind of boro surfaces, Japanese like boro, beautiful sashiko stitch, like very, very beautiful artisanal like overwork surfaces, all hand done. And then he left Capital. He started his own thing called Proletta Re-Art. And he is experiencing this level of exposure and excitement that Capital does. I mean, I don't think LVMH is about to buy him yet, but I do think it's cool and it's a good sign of the times that, you know, you could be in a bedroom in Ohio with a great idea. And now, thanks to the internet, you can share that process. People, like the kids love the process videos. You can share your story, your work, how you do it, the final garments, you can sell, you can expand. Much more so than like, you know, the 90s where you were just making it in your bedroom and that was that, you know?
Right. So, Amy, can we talk just a moment about your book, Denim Dudes, which was published in 2015.
Yes.
So, you know, here we are exactly 10 years later. What has really changed in the denim market in terms of some of the styles and trends that were in that book versus now?
You know what? This is wild because we are, as trends are always cyclical, we are coming into a resurgence of what was bubbling up then. So in So in 2015, obviously the book came out. I was working at WGSN and I was meeting all these amazing people who worked in denim. And I was like, oh, what if we photographed them and they wore their ultimate denim outfit and they talked about it. And because we were shooting mostly in 2013, 2014, the heritage, quote unquote, trend was rife. And I actually had to really go out of my way to try and diversify who we shot, because otherwise everyone would be in chore jackets and, you know, the sort of 1950s 501 raw selvedge denim. It wasn't everyone, but it was very much the uniform men, especially like if you were into denim, because you were into like this purist heritage scene. What's really cool right now is Gen Z are starting to come round to it, which is really interesting, because Gen Z approach everything completely differently, way less rules, way less sort of meticulous kind of like, well, this, you know, this cotton came from here and then it was woven at Cone Denim Mills in North Carolina and this guy made it. They care about that to a certain extent, but they, I guess the like we were talking about earlier about how every fit is trending, they add their own spin and they're not kind of like, I need to replicate a 1940s jean. I'm making my own thing. But their understanding and like cottoning on, pardon the pun, to, yeah, like high quality jeans and selvedge denim and stuff like that. So when you say, yeah, what has changed? I would say the world has definitely changed. Technology and social media has exploded. It has made, in a really good way, it's made the world more democratic. Like I said, you know, these kid makers in far-flung places can actually put their stuff in front of an audience and share what they're doing and create communities online, which is awesome. And they have more chance of success or being picked up by a bigger brand big time. You know, that's your portfolio in a way. Your Instagram feed can be your portfolio, and that's changed a lot. But it is also interesting how trends are cyclical, and yeah, this new generation of kids are discovering, you know, selvedge and you know, Japanese denim, but they're doing it in a slightly different way with less rules. I think, you know, 10 years ago, us millennials and Gen X were kind of like learning about the history of denim and then sort of replicating it. And now I would say Gen Z are kind of like learning and then spinning it, you know, which is cool.
Where can our listeners find you, Amy?
Well, we have an Instagram feed. It's called Denim Dudes. Very easy to remember. And then we have a brand new website. And obviously we do, you know, we work with a lot of the world's leading denim brands. And we, you know, we consult for them. We tell them what's coming next. We just last week, I think, launched a brand new website with a subscription model. And it's, you know, it's aimed at brands. If you're interested in denim and you are a fledgling brand, a one-man brand, or just a student, or, you know, we have a certain amount of content that we put up for free because we love to educate and help and support. So you can go onto denimdudes.com and there is a whole content page of, you know, our ideas. Maybe it's an article, maybe it's an interview with an emerging designer, or it might be a whole report, which we give away for free, that's all about fabric trends and what are the mills doing and, you know, what's technology doing. So there's a certain amount that you can access for free. And then obviously we are aiming at the larger brands on a subscription model, much like the WGSN that I came from all of those years ago, but very small, very niche, and just like focus on denim and casual wear. So yeah, it's the Instagram and the website are our key spots to share. And we love to do it. We love to do it.
Yeah. And the website is, I have to say, it's outstanding. I don't know who worked on it. Yeah. It's really easy to get through and very user friendly and large print and just click and go. And I thought it was, in fact, the subscriptions I thought were quite reasonable too. So
they are.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So
maybe that's my problem. So the way that works, and this is probably boring and we can cut out, but essentially, yeah, it's like 500, 800, 1250. But when it comes to someone like Levi's, you know, we work with them quite a lot. And on the back end, I look at all of our users, right? And it's wicked. It's really exciting because there's a lot of people looking from like Gucci to Levi's, you know, but That is going to be for like one seat. So what I'm hoping for like someone like Levi's is I'll be like, hey, maybe your whole design, or maybe not your whole design team, but like if I start with like 20 seats in suddenly, that is, you know, like 25K a year, which that's where I'm hoping to really grow this. And that's what obviously WGSN do. But the other plan here is it's kind of a, it's a little catch 22 where the more money we are getting in, the I can expand my team and we can create more content and then we can charge more. So it's sort of like, it's our kind of like, we're starting at that and then we'll hopefully grow on it. But it's an exciting time. And thank you so much for the compliments. We worked with an amazing designer and then a programmer kind of like made it, brought it to life. And it's what I like as well is like, you know, we've used the orange and we really kind of like, we just moved away from the sort of traditional, let's make it like blue and, you know, indigo and heritage-y. We were like, we're an agency. We need to aim at it looking cool and dynamic, and aim at those CEOs and make it exciting looking. So thank you for the compliments.
Oh, you're so welcome.
We worked really hard on it and it's very late. It was meant to come out in April. So, you know, websites, man.
You're very, very welcome. Amy Leverton, it has been an honor and a pleasure. Thank you so much for appearing on FashionCast.
It's been an honor and a pleasure. Right back at you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to FashionCast. To hear more shows and join our email list, please visit our website, fashioncast.co. You can also join us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. Until next time, I'm Michael Gloucester for FashionCast, the voice of fashion.